The following podcast is sponsored by the New Ease Roto Fork. The New Ease Roto Fork is a battery-operated, self-twirling spaghetti fork. Get a New Ease Roto Fork today. Hi, everybody. Ethan Uslan here. Time for another episode of the Carolina Shout. I'm going to start today's episode by responding to listener email. Let's see here. Here's an email from Kirk in Durham, North Carolina. Perusing it right now, I see that Kirk actually wrote me not one, but two questions. Kirk, I like your curiosity. That's what I like about the Carolina Shout. Our listeners have an insatiable thirst for ragtime knowledge. Well, at least one of our listeners does. The rest are either too shy or they know everything already. So, Kirk, I'd be happy to answer your questions, but first let's give you a proper introduction.
Questions. I got questions that are coming from Kirk. Yes, I've got a couple questions from Kirk. And I'll answer both these questions from Kirk.
Here's Kirk's first question. I'd be interested to know more about the rag The Entertainer. I know it became famous when it was featured in the movie The Sting, but was it popular before then? Also, what do you and other old-timey pianists think of this song? Is it a standout or is it reviled? Ah, The Entertainer, composed by Scott Joplin. Yes, many of us children of the 80s and 90s may recall following the ice cream truck as it played The Entertainer. But when Scott Joplin composed this in 1902, it was not a hit, just another ragtime piano piece lost in the sea of popular music. And The Entertainer languished in obscurity until 1974, when the movie The Sting came out, featuring Robert Redford and Paul Newman. Very handsome guys. So The Sting had a bunch of Joplin rags in the soundtrack, including The Entertainer. And in May of that year, The Entertainer went gangbusters and made it all the way up to number 3 on the Billboard Top 100, right behind Dancing Machine by the Jackson 5. And he got the Pulitzer Prize. Not Michael Jackson, Scott Joplin. So the moral of the story is, if you want people to appreciate your musical genius, make sure your music is prominently featured in a blockbuster movie featuring handsome people. And for the second part of Kirk's question, what do I think of The Entertainer and what do other old-timey pianists think? Well, speaking for myself, I like The Entertainer a lot. I learned an abridged version as a kid, and it brought me a lot of joy. And people always have loved to hear this piece, and I think it's a wonderfully well-constructed piece of music. And when I play it these days, I really appreciate not just the melodies in there, but the exact voicings that Joplin used, the exact way he wrote it down. He really makes the tune shine. And I suppose, speaking on behalf of other ragtime piano players, many of us don't play it very often because we probably fear that it's been overplayed. But, Kirk, your question leads me to think maybe it's been so overplayed that now piano players are overcompensating and now it's too underplayed. So maybe there are people listening to this podcast who have never heard The Entertainer before. You never know with these millennials. So here it is. So overdone, it's underdone. The Entertainer. So that was The Entertainer by Scott Joplin, played pretty much how the master wrote it. I think that's how it sounds best. It's really quite addictive to the ear, I must say. And one of the great things about The Entertainer is that main theme, that catchy part. It's got a real nice call and answer thing going on. And that's a great feature of African American music that you hear in spirituals and ring shouts, and in this case, ragtime. The Entertainer is one of those rare songs that's both really famous and also high quality. It's so good that I would never dare to jazz it up and play it like a 1920s stomp. Just kidding. In 2009, I recorded it as a 1920s style stomp. I don't really play it like that anymore, but at the time, I was still in my 20s, and I wanted to do something bombastic. That's what people do when they're in their 20s. So here's that recording of me playing The Entertainer 1920s style while I was still in my 20s. Now for a word from our sponsor. Today's sponsor is the New Ease Roto Fork, the battery-operated self-twirling spaghetti fork.
I'm just wild about the New Ease Roto Fork. New Ease Roto Fork. I can't live without the New Ease Roto Fork. New Ease Roto Fork. If you want to be civilized, get a fork that is motorized. I can't live without the New Ease Roto Fork. New Ease Roto Fork. Tuning forks will not do. When spaghetti spaghettis on my plate. I get my fork to oscillate. Nui's Rotofork, I love you.
Okay, moving along in the program, let's go to Kirk's next question. Dear Ethan, I'd like to be able to know what exactly is stride piano and how it differs from related styles of that time. That's a great question, a bit tricky to answer, but I'm going to do my best. Stride piano refers to the style of jazz piano that came out of Harlem in the 1920s and 30s, and its leading practitioners were James Price Johnson, Fats Waller, and Willie the Lion Smith, although there were several others. And the word stride probably refers to the leaping left hand, but I think that leads to some confusion, because just because the music has a leaping left hand doesn't mean it's stride. Stride is more specific than that. Jelly Roll Morton, who is from New Orleans, had a boom chick left hand, but it wasn't stride. He wasn't a stride player. George Gershwin made some recordings of his popular piano playing, and they were very jazzy, and the left hand went boom-chick, boom-chick, but that's not considered stride. Just about all American popular piano playing of the early 20th century had a left hand that strode back and forth, but it's not necessarily stride. So what makes Harlem stride so different? Really, I think there's two main things. First, in Harlem stride, more than other styles, the left hand imitates the upright bass. Often the pinky kind of slaps single notes, kind of how a bass player gives the string a strong pluck. Also in stride piano, these bass notes are walking, like a walking bass. And here's an example. Here it is again. This is just the left hand, and listen to how the pinky slaps those single notes like it's a bass before striding up to the chord and then back again to the bass. Now, here's that same left hand figure with the right hand playing the melody. So that was actually an excerpt from Fats Waller's Handful of Keys, one of the great stride masterpieces. I hope you heard how that left hand is walking along, making a bass line, and going back and forth with the chords. And you hear this a lot in stride piano. Now, it's not in every piece constantly, but you hear it a lot, and hopefully now you'll notice it when you listen to more stride piano. And another defining feature of Harlem stride is in the right hand. And if you listen to the old recordings of Fats Waller and James P. Johnson, you'll hear that they have a similar language, a similar vocabulary of licks and riffs that appear again and again in the right hand. You know, they may not necessarily be exactly the same, but kind of similar. And I could play a bunch of these licks and say, oh, this is a stride lick, listen to this one, listen to this one. But I think the best way to get a handle on this is just to listen to a lot of stride piano, and you'll start hearing them. And so I'm going to play some stride piano for you right now, and I'll start off with James P. Johnson's Jingles from 1929. Jingles, not shingles, jingles. Listen for that walking bass that pops up here and there within this piece, and listen to those rhythms and licks in the right hand. And again, when you listen to more stride piano, you might hear some stuff that kind of sounds like that. Thank you. So that was me playing James P. Johnson's Jingles from 1929. James P. Johnson was the father of Harlem Stride Piano. And now I'm going to play a number by his protege, Fats Waller. And this piece is called A Handful of Keys. And it was first recorded by Fats that same year that James P. Johnson recorded Jingles, 1929. Here it is, Handful of Keys. Okay, well, that's it for Kirk's questions. I hope I answered them to Kirk's satisfaction and to your satisfaction. Keep the questions coming, folks. Not just Kirk. Everybody, anybody. I'll do my best to answer them. Just contact me through my website or social media or my email address, emuslan@gmail.com, or have your people speak to my people, whatever. And it's almost time to close up shop for today, but my son, Henry, who is 7 years old, he's been sitting here patiently. He has a question too. So I'll take Henry's question before we wrap it up.
Should I do something funny? Because the whole time I heard you, it was lame and boring.
Okay, I'm sorry to hear you feel that way. Would you like to read the funny credits?
Yes, okay.
All right,
whatever that is. The Carolina Show is produced in Charlotte, North Carolina by Ethan Useful and Kate Useful. The Carolina Show has not won an award for anything, but maybe in 100 years, when we're dead, we'll get a Pulitzer Prize. Thanks to Kirk for his great questions, and sorry if we embarrassed you. Thanks also to the Hog Wild Self-Turning Spaghetti Fork. for making life worth living. You have been listening to Carolina Show. I'm Henry Henhen. Bye-bye. Shut your mouth. Go away. Mama Luca Boo Boo Day.